welcoming party. So firstly, thank you so much everyone for coming. Just to introduce myself to those who don't know me, I'm Annabelle Tilbrook, so I'm one half of Tilbrook Estate. So a very warm welcome to you all. The other half, my husband James, is still in the UK visiting family, but he sends a warm welcome as well. And James, seeing James, has been messaging overnight, and he said, don't forget to tell them they came by wine. So I can see you been doing that already, so I'll pass that on. Just a little bit of housekeeping. The toilets are just outside in the other building there. So use them if you need to. There's water here. We've had a first drink on the house. We had some cake after these speeches. Just mingle and enjoy yourselves. This exhibition is a collaboration, and collaboration is an important step forward for us. As a heavily foreign heritage property, we're so pleased to have made it to this point. It's taken some original teeth, literally, and out of a jaw that clicks, just a little anguish and hard work, but it is also to a large extent being made possible by overwhelming community support. A large proportion of it coming from people previously unknown to us. It seems right that we now use this beautiful space, which has risen from the blackness, to bring the community together for events such as this. Mm-hmm. When I first approached Belinda and we discussed the focus of the exhibition back in January, I talked about a hope that it could show a step forward in recovery, demonstrating the return of some right part of this. At that point it seemed to me, with all we've been through, and the traumas the wider world has seen, maybe we all needed something lighter to focus on. Belinda said she wasn't sure she could do playfulness, but after some careful consideration, she said she did think she was ready to do joy. Thank you, Belinda. I know this has been no means an easy task. I have to admit it brought tears to my eyes when I first saw it on Friday. This brave exhibition and associated collection of poetry tells a great story. To me, both are a testament to Belinda's tenacity as well as her amazing expressive capacity. While there have been so many black moments post-fire, for many of us, almost right from the early stages, there have been opposite moments of pure joy, coming at times unexpectedly. Many times from nature itself, many times from unsolicited kindness of others, from friendship, and from the joy that comes from a strong bond in our wonderful little community that is local. Hosting this exhibition and book launch for myself is partly an expression of this. So that's enough from me now. I'd now like to introduce Rachel Mead, who's here to formally launch the exhibition, and Belinda's new poetry book, Echidnas, got new here and more. Rachel Mead is a novelist, poet and arts reviewer, with her creative work appearing widely in Australia and internationally. She's the author of the novel The Application of Pressure, published by Affirm Press in 2020, and four collections of poetry, including The Flaw in the Pattern, in 2018. In 2019, she spent a month in the Taleggio Valley in northern Italy on an eco-poetry residency awarded by Australian Poetry. She recently won the Barbara Hanrahan Fellowship in the Adelaide Festival Awards for Literature to continue on her work. Her novel about the first Australian woman in Antarctica, The Art of Breaking Ice, which is due for publication in 2023. So, over to you, Rachel.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you to Belinda for the honour of asking me to launch both the book and open the exhibition today, and thank you to Tilbrook Estate and Annabelle. It's such an amazing place. This is my first time here, so I will be recommending it widely. Before we start, I'd just like to acknowledge that we're all gathered here today on Paramount land, and I pay my respects to elders past, present and still emerging, and thank you all for being here. As hills dwellers, I know that we all share there's a word that makes our hearts thump hard in our chests. And we are all familiar with that same species of fear, the word bushfire. We all remember the date. It's etched in the memories of so many Hills people and, yeah, many of the people who are in this room. December 20 of Black Summer in 2019, which was the day that Belinda Broughton and Irvin Danik lost everything except each other. The house in which they'd raised their family, the studios which, for decades, in which they'd created their art, photos, journals, a life's worth of memories attached to objects, and also the landscape that Belinda had loved and tended for over 40 years. And now when we read the papers or we scroll through the feeds on our phones, in those increasingly rare moments that the news cycle tackles what comes after the fire, what is in the aftermath of devastating loss, we see words that are like rebuild and recover. And those are words that seem to focus on the human scale of loss. But Belinda's life and work and philosophy is all about living with the land, not on it. She is a poet and an artist who loves nature so deeply. Her relationship with the landscape is one of respect and mutual coexistence rather than consumption or exploitation. So for someone like Belinda, the scale of loss from that fire was even more profound. It transcended the human scale. She was mourning a loss on a landscape level. When I first met Belinda, many, many years ago now, it was I had no idea she was a visual artist. We were in a I came to a writing group that Belinda had been a stalwart of for many years, and it was a group of women poets who wrote Western versions of traditional Japanese forms of poetry. Belinda's work, as you can imagine, was just simply amazing. She just haiku, tanka, renga, senru, haibun, she was just phenomenal. But it was Belinda's work with the form of haiga that simply took my breath away. Now, haiga is a form of Japanese painting that combines a painted image with a haiku poem. And like the poetic form of haiku, haiga is based on a very simple yet profound observations of the everyday world. And when you view this exhibition while holding this very powerful and profound poetry collection in your hand, what you'll see is that Belinda, like a true artist poet, has taken that principle of haiga and she has expanded it into something beyond haiga. This combination of poetry and imagery is haiga writ large. It's a series of images and poems that together tell the story of the fire, but also of a woman's loss and grief and resilience of the landscape that she loves. So echidnas don't live here anymore, and echidna, I love this title so much, echidnas any minute now. they both stand alone as self-sufficient and important works of literature and visual art. But together, they create something that is greater than the sum of their parts. Together, they form a profoundly moving visual and textual document of a survivor's experience. Just as haiga delves into those individual moments, recording what is seen and thought and felt, so too do each of these images, and so too does this amazing book of poems. Poetry, there are poets in this room, so I know that I don't need to convince anyone of this. Poetry is a wonderful vehicle of delving into the deeply personal. It allows the reader a special kind of intimacy with the mind and the heart of a poet. And this book is important not just because of the subject matter. On one level, it's important because it brings home to us the dire consequences of the climate emergency that we are living through right now. But it's also an important work because of the poems themselves, the quality of the work. Belinda is an exceptional poet, and as any of you who've been fortunate enough to read her past books of poetry would very well know, poem by poem, Belinda takes us into her world and she opens us to the day-to-day reality of what it is like to lose everything and that long, distressing, traumatic process of making life anew. These poems will make you cry. They'll make you feel like your heart is almost wrenched from your chest. But alongside the grief, and it's a grief with more faces than you can imagine, there's also laughter. And alongside loss, there's also hope. So as an artist and a poet and a boots-on-the-ground natural philosopher, while grieving for all of the beloved animals and plants that were lost in the fire, Belinda was watching, day by day, alert for signs of life. And not just those, the obvious lurid fuzziness of the epicormic growth on eucalypts. This was, Belinda was observing incremental renewal on a physical and a spiritual and an ecological level. Poem by poem, this book creates a harrowingly beautiful personal history that lets us slip inside Belinda's world, showing us what it feels like to lose everything. And then she guides us as she experiences wave after wave of grief, but keeps kicking back to the surface, finding hope in the weeds that sprout through the ash, the new birds that come to surround her new home, the support of her family, the support of her community, and ultimately the resilience of her bushland home. So looking at both this collection and the breathtaking images that chart this journey from loss through grief into recovery, I'm astonished by the remarkable use of ink, the way she manipulates that simple black liquid to capture the essence of so many diverse moments over the past 2.5 years. The ink charts grief. We see ash and charcoal and the chaos and panic and smoke of the inferno itself. But that same liquid also shows us the wash of rain, the weight of cloud, the sorrow, the blackened limbs of trees, but we also see the tiny details, the delicate heads of new grass, the soft gills of fungi, the butterfly wings, the jaunty swish of the willy wagtail's tail. And she brings us her landscape with both a biologist's eye and a lover's intimacy. And ink is that link between the word, those images and the words in this book. And I can just see Belinda day after day, notebook in one hand, visual diary in the other, charting all that she sees and feels and thinks, weaving together those observations of the land, the observations of the human world, but also charting the regrowth and the recovery of her home and herself. So, okay, I'm going to stop talking so you can raise your glasses to Belinda. But I want to give you a quick taste of the words that accompany and amplify these incredible images. So please do not leave without purchasing a book from the table there. The first one I'll read is page 22, as if there was anything left. Relentless summer sun, as if there was anything left to burn. Cutting wood, piling timber, a rabbit rushes out. Small miracles, the perfect standing spade. Endless blue sky, and from the charcoal and fallen leaves, first flower. Pieces of the 500-year-old jug, its glaze still green. Tears, they don't solve anything. Fire fungi, through the counting of losses, starlight. And I will leave you with dandelion lessons. The wind does what wind does, it blows. The dandelion flowers nod. They succumb to the forces acting upon them. They become more strong, simply feeding the bending stalks and allowing movement. Flexibility, it's called. There's a lesson there. Meanwhile, they do not stop for a moment, this vital interaction with sunshine, receiving it, transforming it, carrying its power into the soil, where roots seek out moist places and minerals, and interact with mycelium that interacts with other forms of life down there in a massive interconnecting web like a brain, and just as amazing. But unlike a brain, they don't make stories about how this soil is fertile or not fertile, or how the wind, rough or gentle. They just go on with the process of breathing life and nodding the bright sunshine faces of their fruiting bodies. And the wind keeps on blowing, sometimes blustery, sometimes soft. So thank you so much for listening. It's now my immense honour and privilege to declare Belinda Broughton's poetry collection, Echidnas Don't Live Here Anymore, launched, and the exhibition Echidnas Any Minute Now officially open.
Hello everybody, thank you so much for coming. It is a privilege to have you all. Thank you. Rachel, thank you. Rachel not only speaks really well about me, but she wrote a blurb on the back of the book, which is pretty nice, and she's mutual admiration type right here. She is a fantastic poet and a wonderful thinker and a great writer of all sorts of other stuff as well. So thank you. And thank you, Annabelle, for hosting us and for caring for me and for making it possible and for having the idea. Annabelle had the idea of putting poetry on the wall, which, because people were standing to read it, fancy that. and hence, you know, I said, well, we probably need some visuals, and oh look, I seem to have to do a book before I can write any poetry for the wall. So there you go. This was 6 months, I think, from that idea to this and to those things. And talking of this, Stephen from Ginnivera Press, who is not here, but who I thank terribly much for pushing this out in a very short period of time, and people who helped with the book itself, my editor who is not here, Graham Rowland, and Margaret Wilson, who is a fantastic proofreader and gave me some fantastic editorial advice right at the last minute, so I didn't insult you all. That's a good thing, isn't it? Well, there was something I said, it was written for a blog, really, and it worked in the context of that, but it really did not work in the context of the book. My daughter Hannah, who is also not here, because children tend to have concerts and things, who designed the cover, put my work and put the sort of put it together. Very clever girl, that one.
And your house.
Oh, we'll get to that. Yes. Preempting is the lady over here who does love my daughter as much as I do. Good friend, too. Hannah designed our house. She was almost an architect, and she architected it, actually. She did all that an architect does, with the exception of running the money, which I would have liked her to do, too. Let's face it. Only so much you can do in a day, and she has two children. Lucky there was COVID, so she didn't have to go to uni. Anyway, that's her lovely, very clever girl. I want to thank Kendria Rose and Rach and Lynn Matic for helping me set it up, and to the whole Kitchen Art Group gang, Kitchen Art Table gang, who meets and gives me courage, and the same with Hills Paul. And my dear husband Irvin, for being a rock and for supporting me in every way possible. And to you all, of course, I've already thanked you, but thank you for coming. Okay, I'll read you some poems. Hopefully I'll see if you look tired. So this is about gifts and generosity, my goodness. What we're receiving through this outpouring of gifts, not just to us, but to the whole community. Because I don't know, I think Annabelle mentioned it, but the fire came roaring through here at Christmas place, and then it turned in the afternoon and put our place in miles and miles. So the whole community was raised. And the outpouring of generosity, of time, money, gifts, daily goods, toothbrushes, you name it, all came rushing in. This time, it was amazing. It was very humbling, actually. So this one begins in the garden. Gifts. Hey, little bluebird, I'm weeding your home and place and planting a place for you to nest. A friend gave me these spiny wattles. She gave tomato relish, kitchen knives, and milkweed seeds. Apparently butterflies lay eggs on milkweed. Pickles and prickles and a nursery for butterflies. Since our life burnt down, we have received so many gifts. I hold my heart and I prostrate before the generosity of humanity. It's good that I know no avaricious politicians or the thief who stole our fire pump. I feel sad for the greedy people. How damaged must they be to be so needy? No one I know. Our people opened their hearts and wallets and wardrobes and showered us with love. Even total strangers showered us with love. They opened their hearts as people do when witnessing trauma. But, little bird, the world is full of traumas. One upon another, we are tired and curl up under the covers. Hurt hearts must rest. I wish them good sleep. I wish them visionary dreams of a healthy world. I wish them daytime awareness of health and love and interconnection with you, among others, little blue bird. Meanwhile, I plant a nesting spot for you and milkweed for butterflies and butterflies for magpies and their kin. The magpies warble in the blackened skeletons of trees. Here, in the soft black earth, are kangaroo tracks, and you hop about with your wives amidst the luscious and vibrant growth of weeds. You know, I never did plant for milkweed. Because I was a little worried that perhaps it was really actually a weed. So there you go. That was a lie right there. But back to the stuff about resting, we so need to take care of ourselves at this time. You know, we look at the news and it's trauma upon trauma. How do you survive that? You know, you have to look after yourself. You have to find beauty and love and joy in anything you can. And read wherever it is, Why Choose to Dance, Grandma. The way we find joy. Yeah, not a lot of love. So this is a painter's. This painting is called Changing Colours, and it's informed by the fact that I'm an artist and have used paint and colour for many years, and naturally it's quite deep in me. Now it's, I've got a whole heap of notes inside this, I'm not sure I want to read any of them, but, you know, when you lose, the amount of stuff we lose, you're actually, Irwin used to say, tabula rasa, clean slate. You not only lose yourself, but you actually lose your identity, all the things you thought you were. And you have this choice of becoming who you really are under all the cultural baggage. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with calm, but there you go. Changing colours. In the years before fire stripped me bare, I was so confident that I used my colours straight. Red was red or vermilion, occasionally slumping toward maroon. Yellow was the colour of a child's drawing of the sun. Green was backlit brass in the morning, replete with magpies listening with his feet. Magpie. Blue was the sea or the sky or the eyes of my dead son. Even that did not strip me bare. I still had to prove myself, make money or fame. I was still carrying my mother. These days I am as pure as a teardrop, and there are many of those. There are many of those washing, washing. By now my colours are so muted they hardly know themselves. Still, dandelions know their true colours, as does the sky between rain squalls. There are a million different greens pushing up through the char, and red, can you forget the colour of fire? Okay, a year and 4 months after the fire, we moved into a new house. That's sort of unheard of, really. It's so... And that's because, one, I have an architect at all. We're very close to an architect she was. She says I can't call her back. Not then. Now I can call her an architect. My daughter's an architect. and two, this beautiful builder who'd been building stuff for us since he was 21 and who brought us just down there. He said he'd get us in by Christmas, and 24th of December we moved in. So much. We had so much life. Now, yeah, I'll get to that. So this is new house two. The new houses are weird, you know. They're like a real estate advertisement with bad furniture. You know, and they're echoey and they're strange and you don't know where you are, and you walk through the walls of the old house. And it's just really, really strange. Anyhow, new house two. There's new house one, and there's new house three, but I'll read you new house two. I didn't want to win. I don't want to win because everything is hunky-dory. It is. Couldn't be better. Probably this agitation is a habit of mind and will pass, but I don't want you to think that when it's over, it's over. There is still cutlery to put away and other trinkets, and the mind is a vast cupboard. Where did I put the chopping boards, and how did I end up with so many saucepans, none of which work? But look, here comes another savior bearing saucepans. Thank the living for saviors. I plan to become one soon. What else is life for? Come, saviour, my friend, my loved one. Have coffee more delicious than ever before from this new machine. Sit down here on this new old chair. Help us fill the beautiful corners of this building with what it is that makes a home. Laughter is good, but if it's too early for that, then love will suffice. Tell me if I'm going on too long. No, this is nothing. You know, moving into the new building, and you, especially when you're early, so many people stand behind you, and they are still struggling with just getting, you know, people to do things at the right time. Somebody to cut the dirt before the other person is ready to pour the concrete. You name it. It's very complicated, very long, and you feel when you move into your house sort of almost getting like survivors get.
Yeah.
Dear friend, so this is to them. There's a couple of things directly for them. One of them is a list. It's called There's Not Much to Fire Recovery, and it goes on for like three pages, and there's two full stops in the first two pages. So there's not much to fire recovery apart from blah, 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 blah. I wouldn't call it a poem really, but it's a testament to some of the things people have to do. And I think it's important because, you know, people are saying, my family doesn't understand. You know, they say, how can we still talk about that? This is 2 years after. What do you say?
Yeah, move on. Yeah. We move on, Felice.
Yeah, dear friend, I'm sorry that you still live down the corridors of pain. I turned back and held out my hand, but it turns out we were in different worlds by then. You in a bureaucratic nightmare with mud on your shoes. Me weeding on a hillside in a sun shower, getting wet amid daisies. What can I do? I bend my ears to the daisies and they tell me this is the time of my healing. The earth works constantly on becoming fertile, and I must look forward and not back. But, my friend, your nightmare of pain will end. It can't not if you keep walking one step at a time. Therefore, keep hope. Keep hope. I'm waiting for you on this hillside amidst daisies. And then there was COVID, I missed that one. Boring anyway, boring, let's face it. So God was during McGill, Easter, the middle of Easter, and it was silence. Incredible. Anyway, okay. So Rachel mentioned the acknowledgement for the original inhabitants of this land, the Paramank, and apparently the Garnet used to also come up to this area. And this is about, it's about our white people's ancestral guilt. We can say, well, it's nothing to do with me, but we're carrying that guilt, and we have to meet them halfway. We have to meet them halfway, apart from anything else, just because they're our brothers and sisters, but also because the land, they have an intimate knowledge of the land. And if we can, if they are willing to share that knowledge, then surely we'll all be better off, and surely the land, which is the important thing, will be better off. I hope they didn't come across wrong. Never mind. It's called owning sorrow. Sorrow turns to anger, anger to rage, rage to destruction, or to burning oneself out from the inside. Or sorrow turns to pain. Either way, one drags one's sorrow behind one like a dead dog on a leash. But the sorrow held by our Aboriginal people, our original inhabitants, our First Nations folk, our knowledge keepers, is of another order. This sorrow is of the earth, and if we white people do not pick up their dead dog and carry it, it will bury us. Yeah. So that's the second last one. Better read something. The books are for sale by my vet. The artworks are sale by over there. You're free. I'll read you a little poem. This is a little poem about delight and the way you find it in unexpected places. Goldfinches in dandelions. Where once were red-browed finches and kangaroo grass, European goldfinches feed in the dandelions. Am I happy about that or sad? Before, after, then, now, division, comparison. But tell me, what do the goldfinches feel with their little bodies lively with seed and their delight of air and plant and each other? The world has changed and so have I. I sow kangaroo grass and plan for red-browed finches, but I delight in dandelions, and my heart flutters with these little winged balls of life. And doesn't yours?
Enjoy yourself. By the way.